This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48, Wednesday, the 13th of July, and you are listening to The Morning Run. Now, yesterday, the Department of Statistics revealed that life expectancy at birth in 2021 has increased to 75.6 years, which is an increase by nearly 12 years when compared with 63.6 years 5 decades ago.
This means that babies born in 2021 are expected to live for the next 76 years on average. And with the declining birth rate in Malaysia, the country will be an aging nation by around 2030, when 15% of the population will be 60 years and older. That will include you, Xiaoning.
Yes, thank you.
So as Malaysia undergoes a demographic shift, what are the important considerations that need to be addressed from an economic, social protection and even health perspective?
Okay, so after Philip has revealed my age, nonetheless, we turn to Dr. Juwita Mohamad for some answers. She's the Director of Economics and Business and Acting Research Director at IDEAS. Good morning, Dr. Juwita. Now, this increase in lifespan also means an aging population. So I'm curious, what are the long-term impacts of this from a government perspective? What should the government consider in terms of budget and extra spending that is required?
Good morning, everyone. So I foresee that the government would need to allocate more resources if it were to continue to subsidize the public healthcare system here in Malaysia, as it is doing now. As the country moves towards the trajectory of an aging society, even earlier than 2044, which is earlier than some 20 years away. So the World Bank estimates that 14% of the Malaysian population will be well above 65 years of age by 2044, which is double the 7% projection in 2020 at least. And what is also worrying is that by 2056, over 20% of the population is expected to be above the age of 65. And the definition from the UN is that if more than 7% of your population exceeds 7% when they are above the age of 65, then you're already an aging society. So we are on that path in the next less than 2 decades. So depending on our fiscal target in the next few years to come, the government may need to look for other sources of income to ensure that in the long term, there is a formalized and also a permanent social safety net program that are targeted for vulnerable households and also vulnerable groups.
We see Japan's economy, really GDP 0-1% only per year, and that's sometimes attributed to the aging population that Japan is facing. What is our trajectory for Malaysia to have to, you know, see our economy become like Japan, right, where we see very, very super low growth?
So that is a very good question, because my fear is that we would reach an aging society status before we become a fully developed country or even a high income country. So looking at the statistics that I just mentioned, I feel that with the ongoing issues with our workforce, even though we're not an aging society, we haven't reached that aging society status yet, with productivity levels quite stagnant in the past few years, leading to the pandemic. An aging society would mean, again, lower productivity rate, leading to lower GDP growth in the long term. So raising the minimum retirement age may be one of the solutions, but it's not the ultimate solution. I feel that having a social protection system that includes universal healthcare may be key to ensure that our society are protected well into their golden age.
Okay, so we know what the consequences are of an aging society and what we need to do. But do we have the policies in place to achieve this?
That's a very good question. We do have some sort of a social protection program. But again, according to a study by the Central Bank of Malaysia, the pandemic has actually unearthed deep structural issues surrounding our existing social protection framework here in this country. They found that critical issues also include issues on fragmented and also overlapping programs. Gaps in overall coverage is also an issue. Inadequacy of programs to comprehensively address socioeconomic vulnerabilities, as well as fiscal changes. So we do have a form of social protection program. But then again, with these issues, there needs to be policies that can go towards strengthening or even revamping the structure of our existing social protection programs.
The biggest challenge is that one of the biggest social protection schemes we have, which is the EPF, is under so much pressure with voluntary withdrawals in place now. What do we need to do to beef up and boost our social protection infrastructure, especially for the B40 and M40?
I think first and foremost, when we look at pension funds, as you mentioned, we at IDEAS, we believe that, especially with the government's recent decision to allow savers at EPF to make another withdrawal of up to 10,000 ringgit from their EPF savings, it would risk them leaving even more EPF savers with insufficient savings once they reach the retirement. So again, looking at our trajectory into an aging society within the next two decades, we at IDEAS, we believe that number one, EPF withdrawals should be a policy of last resort, used in emergency situations only. We saw that with the latest, even before the latest EPF withdrawal programs, which also amounted to about 101 billion, this led to a total of 6.1 million members now having less than 10,000 ringgit in their savings for their retirement. And when we looked deeper into the data, about 3.6 million contributors have less than 1,000 ringgit in their accounts. And again, from this group, we saw that 2 million Bumiputra members have less than 1,000 ringgit as their savings. So this is, again, a worrying trend. And I think first and foremost, we can start by restricting withdrawals just for pensioners and just for the right time, and it shouldn't be used for anything else than that.
And Dr. Juwita, the other worry is that actually not everybody has a pension scheme, be it private or that provided by EPF, right? Because I understand maybe less than 50% of Malaysians do, and with the changing nature of work, is how do we better prepare people to retire in a comfortable manner then?
That's the difficult question here. Yes, you did mention a very important issue here. Not everyone is covered, and most of our population are also in the informal sector. Mm. So again, there needs to be a way of again, the government thinking of a more structured social protection program that is more holistic to what we have now. So again, it goes back to funding. How is the government going to be thinking about doing this? If we're going to be introducing some sort of a universal healthcare system in the next decades to come, we need to start now. So this is where I think a lot of rethinking needs to be done.
Okay, so a lot of points in terms of what the government needs to do, but can we also get the individual involved in this discussion, right? Because there's been talk about insurance contributions from let's say myself towards a universal healthcare, or you know, enforcing some sort of mandatory contribution to pension schemes by let's say the freelance workers. Is this the right direction where you make it mandatory?
Well, then again, we need to go back to the drawing board. We need to look at the data post-pandemic, for example. Who are these vulnerable group? I really believe that the B40 label is no longer relevant here. I do feel that the B40 group has morphed into a bigger group, and that the middle income group has already shrunken quite significantly because of the pandemic. So again, of course, for those who are able to do so, private insurances can be the way to move forward. But if we were to look at what is happening on the ground, not everyone and not every family can afford to have private insurance schemes. So again, this goes back to what the government is willing to do in the short run and also in the long run in terms of subsidizing our healthcare system. There needs to be a rethinking in this, I believe.
Can I just ask a quick one? What does it take to get into a universal healthcare system? What's the gap here now?
So again, I'm not so sure about this because in Malaysia, we do feel that access to healthcare is quite good. And because it's heavily subsidized, then it is our access to healthcare is again relatively good if compared to other countries. But again, it goes down to, is the government willing to subsidize our healthcare right. system as it is now, even as we move into the aging society status? There will be more resources to be allocated. And with the current fiscal space, I do feel that there needs to be a change. So it's either the government subsidizes it through taxpayers' money, or either we do have a form of universal healthcare, but with the younger generation funding for the older generation. But it goes back to funding. Are the people willing to do this in the long term?
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Dr. Juwita Mohamad, Director of Economics and Business and Acting Research Director of IDEAS. Up next, the 8 a.m. News Bulletin, followed by The Breakfast Grill, where Philip C. speaks to the CEO of Dilmah Tea. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.